It's time for us to get started. This morning, the scripture reading comes from Acts chapter 18, verses 1 through 4. And I'm reading from New King James. After these things, Paul departed from Athens and went to Corinth. And he found a certain Jew named Aquila, born in Pontus, who had recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had commanded all the Jews to depart from Rome, and he came to them. So because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them and worked, for by occupation they were tent makers. And he reasoned in the synagogue every Sabbath and persuaded both Jews and Greeks.
Morning. This is the last lesson in the series that Mike and I have been delivering this month on couples in the Bible. So far we've discussed three couples, Adam and Eve, Samson and Delilah, and last week Mike delivered a lesson on Esther and the king. Now you might have noticed one thing in common with those three couples. They're all found in the Old Testament. Not too hard to understand why. The Old Testament contains a lot of narratives, a lot of storylines that are involved in particular individuals and their interactions with different people, and many of them involve their wives. There are so many specific couples that I was thinking that we could have done a three-month study and never leave study of couples that are found in the book of Genesis. There are just that many found in that book. But I did want to at least include one New Testament couple in this grouping, and I eventually had settled upon Zechariah and Elizabeth, a couple you don't necessarily hear too many lessons about. Little did I know that during our course of the Wednesday night class that we're doing, we're right smack dab in the middle of Zechariah and Elizabeth, so I felt I could probably find someone else. I told Mike last week I was going to switch it up, but I didn't tell him, but as you can tell from the passage that Jim read, that I've selected to talk about Aquila and Priscilla. Now, there are quite a few married couples in the New Testament about which we don't really have much knowledge about them other than that they were married. Examples of this would be Pilate. We know Pilate had a wife because his wife said she had a dream about this righteous man, meaning Jesus, and that he should have nothing to do with him. Another example is in Acts 24, Felix. We know that he had a wife named Drusilla, and they listened to Paul preach, but they did decline to respond to the gospel, but we're told that Felix was more involved or more interested in receiving a bribe. There's the woman at the well. She had five husbands, but none at the time that she met Jesus. And there's Peter. We're not told anything directly about Peter's wife, but we do know, based upon Luke chapter 4, verse 38, that his mother-in-law had a high fever, and that Jesus did heal her of that, and she got up and then went about taking care of matters of the home. And the obvious conclusion is you don't have a mother-in-law unless you have a wife. Just as an aside, as I was doing my research on couples in the New Testament, there were a lot of people, notably Catholics, that tried to say Peter was a widower at the time of Luke chapter 4, verse 38, and when he became an apostle. I felt it was notable to kind of mention that because there was a writer known as Clement of Alexandria. There may be those of you who have studied church history and may have consulted different secular writers, but at that time he had written that Peter and his wife were both martyred for Christ, and that she was actually killed first as an example of what was going to happen to the rest of them. But the Catholic Church denies that claim because it's not too hard to understand why they would try to do this. If they try to prop up Peter as the first pope, Well, they couldn't have him be married, exactly. And so just thought that was an interesting thing as I did my review of these couples in the New Testament. Then there's couples in the New Testament about which we know quite a bit. Joseph and Mary, of course. There's plenty to know about the parents of Jesus. Ananias and Sapphira. It's not a large passage about their, you know, there's not a large passage about them, but I dare say they may be the couple that you've heard the most lessons about in your life because of the story that they tell about how they plotted the lie, about how much of their proceeds of the sale of their property that they were contributing, and that they both did die because of that deception. And then there was the, like I said, the aforementioned Zechariah and Elizabeth. I looked through the New Testament. I looked for every time the word wife was used, every time the word husband was used. I even looked at household. And those were the only examples that I could, you know, after just a, well, I don't want to say a little bit of, I spent quite a bit of time looking through this, but those are the couples that I could find. There may be others that are in the New Testament that we could imply were married. Cornelius and the Philippian jailer, for example, were told that Peter, in Cornelius's case, like had visited his household. And the Philippian jailer were told that his household was baptized. You could imply that a household has a wife as part of that, but that would just be an inference that we would be drawing from that. So I'm saying that to say this, I could have very easily missed a couple of couples possibly. But I did a pretty good search, and those are the ones that I was able to identify. Now, the last couple that I haven't talked about, of course, is the one that I've chosen for my lesson that Jim read about, about Aquila and Priscilla. We first learn about Aquila and Priscilla in Acts chapter 18, verses 1 through 4, which Jim read. Paul has traveled to Corinth, and we're told that he stays with them because they were tent makers like he was. Then we're told that they, meaning Aquila and Priscilla, had recently arrived there because Claudius had driven all of the Jews out of Jerusalem. Something of interest that I really hadn't considered before I started doing this study, so I wanted to bring it to you. We are only told that Aquila is a Jew. There's nothing mentioned about Priscilla being Jewish. There are secular writers that believe that they have found historical records that have indicated that Aquila was actually a slave that had been brought to Rome. And while he was there, he met Priscilla. We're told in the passage that Aquila is from Pontus. Now, I look, Pontus is a, if you can think of the country of Turkey, you know, it's very, you know, left to right in orientation. The very top in the center is where the Pontus region is. And when I looked at a map, that part of Greece and Rome are nowhere near each other. And so it could easily be understood that the reason why he was in Rome was that there had been some conquering done and he was brought back to Rome, something that would have caused him to travel that far of a distance. That could be an explanation for that. Other supporting evidence regarding that this may have been the situation, how Aquila found himself to be in Rome, is that both Aquila and Priscilla are considered Latin names. In particular, Aquila means eagle. And it might have been given to him once he came to Rome. It might not have been the name that he was born with in his Jewish community. So when he was forced to leave because he was Jewish, if he had married Priscilla, it wouldn't be too hard to understand that she would have just gone with him, even though she would not have been forced to be leaving. It's not too hard to follow that in that scenario. So I had never really considered that, but that is something that I did uncover. So while we do know at least that Aquila was Jewish, we also don't have any knowledge that they had already converted to Christianity by the time Paul arrives in Corinth. It could be that their connection as tent makers allowed Paul the opportunity to have one-on-one discussions with them, and then during that interaction, they were convinced to become Christians. We really don't know their conversion story, whether it was prior to Paul's arrival or not. But whatever the situation was, they had agreed to share their home with Paul. And so one of the first lessons we have from Aquila and Priscilla, regardless of what their situation was when he arrived, they're teaching us that hospitality is something that is found in couples that are striving to do the right thing. They did not know Paul before this, I am convinced, but that did not stop them from being able to invite him into their home. So they're teaching us hospitality as part of their activity that we find there in Acts chapter 18. Paul then stays in Corinth for about a year and a half, we're told a little further down in Acts 18, and then it says he does decide to move on. And so if we drop down into Acts 18 and we look at verses 18 and 19, it says, "After this, Paul stayed many days longer and then took leave of the brothers." I was convinced it's not the brothers, meaning the Christian brothers, not a set of brothers. I got confused on that. I had to go back and just double check. I didn't miss anything. "And he then set sail for Syria, and with him Priscilla and Aquila. At Centrae, he had cut his hair, for he was under a vow. And they came to Ephesus, and he left them there, but he himself went into the synagogue and reasoned with the Jews." Paul first goes to Syria, and eventually he's ending up in Ephesus. The only people that we're told that goes along on this journey with Paul are Aquila and Priscilla. He obviously, whatever their situation was when he met them and lived with them for a year and a half, they by now have become trusted by Paul to be extended this great honor to travel with him. They must have had tremendous growth in that year and a half, at the very least, if they were not Christians prior to that. As we know, interactions with Paul when he travels don't always end up well. Barnabas and John Mark are notable that he didn't tolerate, things about people. He would not allow himself to be put into a situation that he didn't like being in. So he wouldn't travel with someone that he didn't have absolute trust. So this tells us that this invitation that was extended to Priscilla and Aquila should provide us with the idea of the love and the trust that Paul had for the two of them. So we have an inference here based upon Paul's inclusion that they were strong, righteous workers. Paul thought highly of them, and they were worthy of being his companions. Now, we also have some further proof about this. We're told that when Paul arrives in Ephesus, he leaves Aquila and Priscilla there. Now, the wording is kind of strange, that they came to Ephesus and he left them there, but he himself went into the synagogue and reasoned with the Jews. Well, it could be that he left them there and then he went on. It does imply that it might have just been for that moment, but the fact that the very next verses tells that he goes on to Caesarea and Antioch without them, I do think it means he's leaving them there. So the fact that he feels that they could be left at a city the size of Ephesus, that he had a lot of trust in them, and that he did not have any hesitation about leaving them there, and with the confidence that he would have had in them to be able to continue to work in this new city, most likely for them. Doesn't take too long to understand that that arrangement pays off. After Paul does leave and they remain in Ephesus, just a few verses down in Acts chapter 18, verses 24 and 28, we do find another account of Aquila and Priscilla. "Now a Jew named Apollos, a native of Alexandria, came to Ephesus. He was an eloquent man, competent in the scriptures. He had been instructed in the way of the Lord, and being fervent in spirit, he spoke and taught accurately the things concerning Jesus, though he only knew the baptism of John. He began to speak boldly in the synagogue, but when Priscilla and Aquila heard him, They took him aside and explained to him the way of God more accurately. And when he wished to cross to Achaia, the brothers encouraged him and wrote to the disciples to welcome him. When he arrived, he greatly helped those who through grace had believed, for he powerfully refuted the Jews in public, showing by the scriptures that the Christ was Jesus. The next lesson we learned from Priscilla and Aquila was that they did not just sit idly by and mind their own business when it came to matters of the gospel. At some point, they do hear Apollos speak. I'm guessing from the way the passage reads, it wasn't too hard to avoid him. He was speaking boldly. He was speaking in the synagogue in an area where there probably would have been a lot of pushback, but he stood strong. And so he would have been hard to have missed. They took notice of him, and based upon what they did next, they obviously saw a lot of potential in Apollos. But they did realize one thing about his message. While what he was speaking was accurate, it was accurate only up until a point in time. He was only speaking what he had heard about the baptism of John. Notice it does say that what he knew about the baptism of John, he was accurately speaking of that. But he needed to be brought up to the current day. He needed to be taught about how Jesus was the result of John's message, and John's baptism then became the baptism of Christ. So they didn't just sit by and say, well, he'll get it on his own, as so many others probably would have done. They stepped forward. They took him aside. They didn't leave him in his ignorance to just flail away and not be effective. And we're told that they taught him the word of God more accurately. Now, Apollos went on to become a very effective speaker. He wanted we don't know how much time happened, but it says eventually he wanted to go over to Achaia. And instead of just going on his own, he sought the approval of the leaders there in Ephesus. The brothers were encouraged, and they in turn encouraged him to go do so. They were so convinced that this was a good step for Apollos that they wrote a letter of recommendation for him so that when he arrived in Achaia, he could give that letter to the leaders there in that city and they would understand that they could trust him. We're told that once he arrived there, after he had become a part of the Achaean church, just as he had in Ephesus, he stood up publicly to the Jews in Achaia, and using the scriptures, he was able to preach Christ. The evidence that the scriptures held was what he was able to use to spread the gospel in that area. Now you're saying this is about Aquila and Priscilla. That's exactly right. Because of their nurturing of Apollos, he was able to grow. He already had the boldness. He just needed... I heard someone mention about someone who was kind of reckless or someone who, you know, had good intentions but wasn't always on the mark. He was like an arrow without feathers. That may have been how Apollos was. They put the feathers on Apollos and made him be more accurate with his delivery. So Aquila and Priscilla did great things, no doubt, in Ephesus, but because of their efforts with Apollos, there were great things that were then eventually completed in Achaia because of their nurturing of Apollos. Now, this ends the narrative part of what we know about Aquila and Priscilla. They are not mentioned anymore in the book of Acts or in any other book about any things or acts that they did. It is the Acts of the Apostles, not the Acts of Aquila and Priscilla, obviously. But it doesn't mean that we don't know anything else about them. We can feel pretty good that they did continue to live a faithful life and most likely influence other Apollos down through the years. And I can say that with a good level of assurance. At the end of three of Paul's epistles, the book of Romans, the book of 1 Corinthians, and the book of 2 Timothy, Paul either extends a greeting from them, or, well, that would indicate that they were there with him, or he sent a request that the readers of the epistle would greet them specifically for him. Now, these were written years after the initial Acts of the Apostles. That indicates to me that they continued to work with Paul, to serve with Paul, to serve Paul, especially the Roman letter. He probably was in prison, and they were probably there helping him with that. They became a great help to him. That is not too much of a stretch to think of. Paul must have had a special place in his heart for Aquila and Priscilla, not only for what they had done for him, but he surely became aware of the great deeds that they had done with Apollos and undoubtedly countless other examples. We all should hope to have someone like Aquila and Priscilla in our lives to help us, and to have that much of an impact on our lives in the way that they did with the lives of Paul and Apollos. Perhaps there's someone or someones, my spell check didn't like someones, but I'm going with it anyway. There's someone or someones that might actually be the reason why you're here today. They might have been your Aquila and Priscilla. And so we can express thanks to the Lord for them, just as Paul surely did many times over for Aquila and Priscilla. Now, next week we begin a series of lessons that are going to focus on co-workers of Paul. I mentioned earlier that Paul wasn't always the best traveling companion, and that Barnabas and John Mark were an example of that. Well, Mike's going to begin with Barnabas next week. I do have a note here. Aquila and Priscilla could have been included in the co-workers section, but they were not. I'm saying Mike will begin next week with a lesson about Barnabas. At this time, Brother Jose will lead us in a word of prayer, and we will be dismissed to our classes.